Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about self-expression, communication, and getting the word out. So jump on, see where it goes. Oh, and have a good time.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's The Coco Express for Saturday, October 17th, 2009. I'm your host, Aurelia Lyles, coming to you live from Wilmington, Delaware. On today's show, we are discussing transitioning to adulthood with our special guest, Mary Pender Green. Mary Pender Green is an internationally known psychotherapist and relationship expert. She focuses on the relationship with oneself and how it impacts relationship with others. Ms. Green educates people about choosing mates and identifying relationship patterns. She believes that relationships should be carefully selected, analyzed, nurtured, and sometimes dismissed. She maintains a private practice dealing with individual couples, men's groups, women's groups, and executive coaching. She has conducted several workshops titled After the Honeymoon, How to Get Them, How to Keep Them, Self-Care, Ingredients for a Healthy Relationship, From Daughter to Friend, Mother-Daughter Relationships, and The Art of Kissing Up. Also, The Empty Nest Syndrome, and countless others. She has appeared on TV, Good Day New York, Live at 5, ABC News, The Morning Show, New York One, on radio, WBLS, WRKS, WBAI, and in print, The New York Post, Newsday, Essence, and numerous others. She is also co-editor of a book titled Racism and Racial Identify, Reflections on the Urban Practice in the Mental Health and Social Services. Thank you, Ms. Green, for joining us today. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
Oh, we are so glad to have you on the Coco Express. Okay, I'm going to begin by just making, a statement to introduce this subject. Okay, during most commencement speeches, we often hear things like the sky is the limit. This compels some to believe that they can run outside and conquer the world. At best, you get into college or grad school, or you try to find a good job. However, the discussion you missed that wasn't spoken at the commencement speech is what we're going to be discussing today. Researchers have noted that completing formal education, moving out of the parental home, entering the labor force, getting married, and becoming an adult are traditional steps to adulthood. They also call this transition group emerging adults. According to a study done by the NIH, the National Institutes on Health, the average brain doesn't mature until the age 25. Ms. Green, can you define adulthood and tell us at what age can one realistically consider themselves an adult?
Okay, first I'd like to say it's Pender Green.
Oh, Pender Green.
Mary Pender, yes. That's all right. So there is no one answer. It's not as though one could say I'm an adult at 16 or somebody else will be at 35 and not an adult. So it's not one magic number. What you need to keep in mind that there are some basic expectations that one would have so that they could claim adulthood. One of the things that would be first and foremost is this person able to take care of themselves? And if you could really ask yourself that question, am I able to take care of myself? Am I dependent on other people to do the basic things for me? And if the answer to that is yes, I can take care of myself, then that's one indicator that someone is an adult. Somebody could be 16 and in a family where they need extra help for a parent that might be ailing or siblings that they might be responsible for, and they go out and get a job and take care of themselves and other people or help in the family situation, that person could be leaning towards adulthood at 16. But somebody could be 35 living at home, not able to take care of themselves, relying on a parent or siblings or somebody else to care for them, that person, in essence, couldn't claim adulthood as a result of them not being able to step up to take care of themselves.
Okay. Well, according to the Encyclopedia of Life course and Human Development, they have a section called Transitions to Adulthood. It states that due to the economy and related shifts in social values and norms, the transition to adulthood is different from this generation, and it differs from those in other countries. Now, and there was also another research stating that by the National Opinion Research Report by Tom W. Smith, and it's titled Coming of Age in the 21st Century America. And he gives you statistics. On the average, people believe that becoming self-supporting is the first transition that a young person should make. And he says the mean age is about 20.9. He follows that by saying no longer living with one's parents should be around 21.1. And having a full-time job around 21.2, completing school around 22.3, supporting a family financially around 24.5, getting married around 25.7, and having a child around 26.2. Now, bear in mind, this study was done in the March of 2003, and we all know that things have changed drastically since then. Now, how realistic is this, and how do you really prepare for adulthood?
Okay, the first thing to remember is that life has drastically changed for most people, especially in the United States, that it has drastically changed. This is the first generation that is not necessarily expected to succeed where their parents are, and it has to do with the economy, and it has to do with the amount of competition that there is at this point in life. And if you can imagine that, in the past, it was a lot easier to get a job, and it was a lot cheaper to be able to manage. Lots of people that may have been able to go out on their own right after graduation from college and get a job, it would have been a lot more people that could do that. Today, it's much more of a challenge. There are many less opportunities, but it's still possible to do those things, but maybe not in the exact order. For a long time, because of the economy, many people were able to get a job and keep that job. With the difference in the economy at this point, sometimes people get a job, they may be doing well for a little while, and they get laid off. Or people that used to be able to get a job and have insurance and many other vacation, bonus, that kind of stuff, those jobs have become less and less. So that means that somebody might get a job, do well, get laid off, and may need to move in with their parents again. There are many more people who have had to return home. Sometimes it's been about being in a relationship that didn't work and they had to return in that way. It doesn't make them not an adult. It means that basically, the challenge is different at this moment in time. So anything that was written prior to the last 2 years would probably have to be scaled to make note of the fact that after the economy has gone bust, lots and lots of things that used to be are no longer. There was a time when people could rely on savings and stocks and many other types of investments that would be there sort of as a cushion. And now, not only do young adults have to rethink the way that they deal with their career and their development into adulthood, there are many people who were retired that now have to go back to work, not because they're not adults or not because they're not entitled to having some downtime after retiring, but it's because the economy has done something that has shifted the way that people develop and live their lives as they progress.
Okay, that's interesting because the Network on Transitions to Adulthood. They had a policy brief in October 2004. They were comparing those entering adulthood in the 1970s and 80s, and they said that those in the late 1990s are more racially and ethnically diverse, and that reflects a change in the population in general. And they said they are much less likely to have been reared in an intact two-family home. And as young adults, they are more likely to never marry. Their earnings are the lowest of all three time periods, and they have lost ground on both social class ranking and occupational prestige. They also state that the youth today are disconnected from society in a number of fronts. They are less likely to read a newspaper, attend church, belong to religion or union, or identify with a political party. They're very cynical and negative about people. They're less likely to believe people are trustworthy, helpful, fair, and they don't believe in the idea that humans are naturally good and that the world reflects God's goodness. Now, it seems as if they've lost confidence and this country's lost confidence. In this new age, we're going to call this the new age, are there any traditional events that would set the stage for this transition?
Well, first of all, I am never pleased about the idea of lumping all people into any group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know lots of young people who still have moral values, still are optimistic about life, recognize that while there might not be a lot of jobs available, all you need is one. And so there are still persistent, hardworking, committed young people that have the same kinds of values. Many of them still get married. Many of them have monogamous relationships. Now, yes, it is true that life has changed in a lot of ways, but I suspect that if you were to ask people, parents in the 50s, you know, around the time when rock and roll and Elvis Presley came about, people would have said at that point, oh, young people are all, you know, you name it, they've lost their way, they are out of sorts. And I do think that those same people grew up to be productive adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that each generation feel that the other one, the newest one, the new age, we're not going to be able to live up to the values that they have. And I absolutely feel that there are many changes in the last even 10 years, 5 years. But it doesn't mean that that's it forever. The economy's bad, but it's been bad in the past. People are cynical. Usually young people tend to be because they are brought up to believe in ideals, and when they get to see the real world, they realize and feel disappointed that some of the things they thought would be available to them aren't, or their parents aren't perfect. They grew up parents pretending that they were, and as they get older and realize that parents and they are flawed, they get disappointed. But that's a part of being starting to see the world as it really is versus what you might dream it to be. So I've not given up and do not feel that all young folks have given up and will never amount to anything much. I really feel that life is a bit more of a challenge for this generation. But oftentimes, I heard someone recently told me that you fall down for the purpose of being able to get up and be stronger,
mm-hmm.
that you learn from those pitfalls in the process. And it's about persistence. And so it feels very important to keep in mind, if you are a young adult, that yes, you will read all of those things, and for some people, those things are true. But if you believe in yourself, if you keep your dreams in the center, if you keep moving towards those dreams, regardless of what the world is doing or not doing, then there are opportunities that are available to you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned parents and adults, young adults, teens, at this particular stage, it doesn't really matter. They play a really important role in the transition. Now, what can a parent do to ensure that they don't hinder the process of their child developing their self sense of self and becoming an adult?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that a young man recently told me is that the world has lots of obstacles already. And that the one thing that parents need to do to make sure that they're able to be helpful is to not put up obstacles in the home. That the world has obstacles outside, and if the parents can manage not to offer obstacles at home, like saying negative things to the kids or young people, you know, you're no good, you're not going to amount to anything, there's no hope, those kinds of things. Or that the parent isn't doing something that's destructive, that's causing the young person not to be able to focus on themselves. Mm-hmm. An example might be that if a parent is drinking and drugging and not doing what they need to do, that presents an extra obstacle for young people. Or if there are two parents or a mate in the home and they're fighting and carrying on with each other, those are obstacles in the home. So it's important that you, as a parent, wouldn't be putting up obstacles that is going to make life more difficult for the young person. That's key. Second thing is to be able to support them. If they're starting to make good life choices, make comments on it. Congratulate them. Say that, that's a wonderful job. I'm proud of you. So in essence, not being an obstacle and also offering support. The other thing that parents can do is to hold the young person accountable and not spoil them. For example, sometimes people might want their kids to do well so badly that they will do everything for them and not hold them accountable in any way. It's important that you make agreements and hold yourself accountable and the other person accountable. For instance, if you make an agreement this young person is going to pay for the cable bill, for argument's sake, or contribute to the food in the house in some way, while they may not be paying rent, it would be important that the person agrees to hold up their part of the bargain. I know one situation where there is a woman and her young son, who's 22, and basically their agreement is that while she basically manages the household, et cetera, he contributes to the house by paying the cable bill and also by bringing special food to their home so that, in essence, they will always have really top-notch food. For instance, that he'll go out and get shrimp and lobster for them as a part of the meals that they're going to have during the week, making sure that they have extras in addition to what she's already bringing to the table. And that's of the contribution to the home.
Okay. Yes. Okay, we had like a little technical difficulty there for a second. So you were talking about the additional contributions in the home.
Oh, so you didn't hear what I said?
No, wait. I heard pretty much everything in regards to the young man who was bringing in the extra special dishes so that he would be able to add an additional contribution into the home. And then from that point on, we kind of lost you for a minute there.
Okay, so an example that I gave is that he brings shrimp and lobster, so mm-hmm. that in essence, while they have normal meals during the course of the week, they have something special because he brought it. Like he'll go out and get something special, so maybe a couple of days during the week they'll have lobster dinner rather than chicken that might have been on the meal, on the agenda. So he's bringing something special to the table. In essence, it's not just about the shrimp or lobster that he's bringing. He's growing from that because that means that he has to pursue the fish market. What are the items that it is that they want to add to the meals during the course of the week? And sometimes surprise his mother by coming home with some of her favorite items. It's not just that he's bringing these things for the meal today, but he's learning how to manage a household himself.
Okay. Now, in addition to that, friends, associations, and memberships are key to successful integration into society. How should a teen and young adult maneuver them?
Well, this is extremely key to a successful life because in order to do this, you have to start with being clear about what it is you want for yourself. And so if indeed you have moral values and expectations for you, it's important to be able to find other people who meet those same kinds of morals because no one ends up being in the wrong place at the wrong time just because they happen to have gone to the store with somebody who shoots up the place. That never happens. It's about choosing people that are like you who would not ever be in that situation. And so, you know, sometimes you'll hear on the news, oh, this wonderful young person that happened to have been at the wrong place at the wrong time, they were in a stolen car with, you know, six other people.
Mm-hmm.
If you are conscious about the people that you choose and making sure that you are only with people over a long period of time that match where you want to be. And so you might want to ask yourself a question about where do I want to be in 5 years? And where do I imagine this person that's next to me want to be in 5 years? If you're sitting in a cafeteria at college and this person is saying, oh, I'm not going to class. I'm going to stay in the cafeteria and goof off or go outside and smoke a joint instead of going to my class, then you are clear about the fact that your expectations and that person's expectations don't meet each other. And so you make decisions about, especially if you have a goal of being able to graduate within 4 years, get a job, and have some goals in mind, one would make decisions about people that are next to them in their lives, in relationships with them, that have similar dreams. It doesn't have to be the same dream, but have a dream of having a future rather than someone who is focused on the immediate gratification. Because it's all about, can you sacrifice? Are you willing to sacrifice? Do you have goals and dreams that are meaningful to you so that you're willing to do whatever it takes to be able to get those dreams and hopes met?
So would it be a good recommendation that they should, like, find organizations and, you know, that are keeping their goals and ideas in focus? Like, for instance, if a teen who's a senior in high school is interested in becoming, let's say, a radio announcer, so to speak, they should find an organization or someone to kind of, like, give them an idea of what that's like, as opposed to just sitting down saying, I want to be a radio announcer, and not doing anything about it.
Absolutely. So what we're talking about is our little steps that take you where it is you want to go. So you're really talking about mentors, and not just a mentor, because many times people are busy so that they can't necessarily commit to being just your mentor, but a variety of different mentors. And so, yes, indeed, if you're interested in being a nurse, for argument's sake, volunteering at a hospital would be a good thing to do. Or if you know somebody that's a radio announcer, it would be an important thing to be able to get to know them better, ask them if you could come to their job to watch what they do. And if you don't know somebody that's a radio announcer, it would be important to be able to Google to find out about the kinds of schools that would offer that kind of training. And sometimes people think too broadly, that they have to go to school, a four-year college, to be able to be a radio announcer. One would imagine that learning more detail about it doesn't necessarily require 4 years of college to be that. It means that you need to go and get exposure to it so that you could find out if it's really what you want to do. Because I've worked with many young people who thought that they wanted to do one kind of work, and once they started to get exposed to, realized it wasn't for them. I think the other piece is that having the ability to change your mind is extremely important. Because if you dream about things but don't get close enough to them to see if it works for you, then you could spend a lot of time imagining that this is what I want to do, and when it comes down to it, and when you actually get the opportunity to be exposed to it, then it doesn't work for you. It's not what you want, even though you might have thought so. But as long as you're too far away from it, you're not able to know. I think the other thing, too, is to consult your gut. Make friends with yourself. And that is constantly listening to what feels important to you. And sometimes that comes from being able to be silent, not listening to what other people think that you should do or shouldn't do, being able to listen to yourself, try different ideas on, and if it doesn't work, being able to say, that doesn't work for me, I'm changing my mind, I'm going to be open to other things. I think the one thing that feels extremely important here is to recognize what you might want to do at 20 may be different at 25, maybe even different again at 30. So just because you thought you wanted to do something doesn't mean that you can't change your mind.
Okay. What are common mistakes that teens and young adults make?
Well, I think one of the major mistakes that people make is to be too trusting, that listening at what people say instead of what they actually do, and so, or following other people's suggestions rather than listening to their own. I have an example that sometimes people befriend older folks who manipulate them in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I know of a young man who was working at a job, and there was an older man there who manipulated him by saying that, gee, I have this crisis, and if you could loan me $150, I'll get it back on Monday. And the young man loaned the $150, which was almost all of his pay because he was working part-time. And in essence, this was just a strategy that this older man did on a regular basis, and it was almost impossible for him to get his money back. So really looking at people not just for what they say but what they do. The other thing is that sometimes people, young people make mistakes by getting credit cards and messing up their credit really early in life. They can sometimes sign up for phones, you know, signing contracts for a phone company that is really, and changing your mind and wanting something else, but yet walking away from the old thing and not handling it, because many of those things come back to bite you. I think the other thing, too, is that they sometimes engage in friendships with people that are not deserving of their friendship, so they get taken advantage of in a variety of ways. Getting involved with a male or a female in terms of a romance and not listening to their gut when it's not working for them, allowing themselves to be abused in some way. Sometimes females might be in a relationship with somebody who is abusive or disrespectful, and they do things that hurt them, and yet they the person will apologize, and they keep taking them back and keep allowing themselves to be manipulated or treated badly. I think all of this goes into being able to be mindful that if things look too good to be true, it probably is, that most of the time we get what we pay for, and it's pretty unlikely that something that looks really good and is extremely cheap is valuable, especially on the internet, that you can oftentimes be suckered into, you know, spending or buying a high quality computer for $100. You know, it's likely not the case. So the idea of sort of trying to get something for nothing can cause people trouble. And when people tell you who they are, you need to listen. And I'm not talking about what they say, but what they do. And so oftentimes people say something and do something else, and then they give you excuses as to why they didn't do what they said they were going to do. And so you need to listen to and watch what they do versus what they say. And I think that's a part of what diverts people from their dreams.
Okay. Would you recommend that when it comes to young adults and teens, if they have an issue, to seek out an adult to discuss it with? Because I know a lot of times they go to one another and they ask each other for advice. And from my experience and from personal witness, usually that particular person doesn't have as much experience as you do. And sometimes
Absolutely. The thing that I always say about advice is that if the person doesn't have the kind of life that you want for yourself, then there is nothing they can give you around advice that's meaningful. That listening to your gut is even more important. And the other thing is, I'd like to suggest that people think about things like Terry Williams' book, Black Pain, It Just Looks Like We're Not Hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us hurt. They hurt because they've been abused, neglected, or hurt in some way. And one of the things Terry talks about in her book is that it's extremely important to get help and not to try and go it alone. And so if indeed you're able to be able to, first of all, recognize that many people are hurting. And if you have been hurt, or your parents or your siblings, and I'm not only talking about physical pain, I'm talking about emotional pain, where you've been traumatized in some way. People have physically or sexually abused you in some way. Those are things that you can't handle by yourself. And so going to other people that you see to be healthy is important. And if somebody is always talking to you about how miserable they are, how many things are wrong with them, and how much pain they're in, then that is not likely to be the person that's going to help you with decisions about yourself. So if you can just always keep in mind, the first question is, does this person handle themselves the way that you would handle yourself, or the way that you want to have for yourself? If that's not the case, then they can't give you advice. It's amazing how sometimes people are dealing with others that are down and out and accepting their advice, especially if somebody's telling you about, well, you should get rid of this person, or this is the kind of person you should date, and this is a person that doesn't have anybody in their life. Why would their advice be better than yours?
Okay. Now, it's interesting that you would mention Terry Williams' book. She wrote an article for the Black Collegian, and she states that suicide is the third leading cause of death among people under the age of 25 and the second leading cause of death among college students. One out of four young adults will experience a depressive episode by age 24. 60% of students reported feeling things were hopeless and one or more times during the school year. Now, we have to kind of figure out, how can people learn some type of coping skills? What would you recommend as coping skills?
Well, the first thing, the first part of being a productive adult is to learn not to hide and to seek out people that you can trust. It could be, and most of the time, these people would likely be older than you. So you're going to look at people that are doing well and develop relationships with them, bring questions to them, run things by them. And if indeed you do get in a snag, a part of being an adult is being able to recognize that I need help. I don't have the answer alone. And that there is almost always somebody that you could go to. So I would suggest that all young people think about, who might I go to if I had a crisis? Not only wait until you have a crisis, but just think, if you're listening to this program, one of the things you might want to start doing is make a list of people, either in your mind or on paper, where you would be able to go to if you had a crisis. And you could trust them. And that person would be somebody whose life is working as an adult. The other thing that would be important is that there are many clinics that are around, and they're called mental health clinics, but it doesn't mean that you have to be crazy to go. Mental health means that, just like physical health, is your mind healthy? Is your body healthy? So nobody would take exception to getting help for a physical ailment. But oftentimes, especially Black and brown people, many times they think of mental health and say, oh, you have to be crazy to get help. And I want to say that we often have bruised hearts. And while we would go and get help for physical pain, we often don't go and get help for emotional pain or bruised heart. And so I'd like to basically say that getting help from a psychiatrist, psychologist, social worker, minister, people that you can trust would be really important. And with regards to the suicide, things that may seem unworkable at 20, at 22, at 24, will absolutely become clear as time goes on. So those young people that feel so hopeless early in their life are only hopeless because they haven't had that experience as yet. So when you have things that don't work out well, as I said earlier, that falling down gives you the opportunity to get stronger while you're picking yourself up. And picking yourself up gives you, with other people, gives you strength for the next thing that comes along. That no matter what it is that is paining you, it will change. And so no matter how many good things you have, as time goes on, you're going to have some bad things. No matter how many bad things you have, as time goes on, you're going to have some good things. But you have to be around to be able to see that as time goes on, you get stronger, you get more knowledge, you have more choices about how to be able to handle a situation. And so in essence, giving up is the only reason that prevents you from succeeding. If you have a bad day, maybe you can't do something for today or tomorrow, but you keep at it. That persistence is what makes the difference.
Okay, great. Let's see. I have one other question that I want to ask. You know,
Okay. What
should young adults do to allow themselves to keep focused, let's just say, because the unemployment rates are so high and most college graduates are going to experience a lot of rejection when they go out there. Would you recommend that they get into internships? They may not be paying and they may not pay a lot, but if they just get themselves involved in activities that will keep them focused on their goals, would that be a good recommendation?
Yes, but the most important recommendation is the recognition that you don't need 10 jobs, you need one. And while there are limited opportunities, doesn't mean that there are no opportunities. And so the person that is persistent and believing that they are going to manage is the person that's going to succeed. And it's like musical chairs. You know that there are only a certain amount of chairs and someone is going to be left standing. It needs to be clear that it's not going to be you, and that people that succeed at musical chairs, for argument's sake, are the ones that are going to do untraditional things. They might jump over the chair to get in. They might wiggle themselves in from the side, but basically being focused on the fact that I am determined to get a job and that I might volunteer for no money, but I'm learning, that I'm constantly moving towards those goals that I have for myself, that I'm going to do whatever it takes to be able to be in that seat, because I know that there are other people who are saying to themselves, oh, no, there are no jobs, oh, no, I'm never going to get one, etc. But when you're saying to yourself, there aren't a lot of jobs, but I'm going to get one. All I need is one. And the other thing that will be extremely important is the recognition that whether it's young people that are trying to get you from your dreams by helping to pull you away from what's important to you, or if you go on an interview and somebody says something that is a dream killer, you need to be clear that nobody can kill your dreams but you. That if indeed somebody says you're not good at being a radio announcer, you should go and work in a factory, you don't have to listen to them. They don't know you. They don't know your determination. And as long as you have determination and persistence, whatever your goals are, will be possible. No one ever can steal a dream. You'll give it away. You'll be giving it away. They won't steal it because it's up to you.
How can people get in contact with you if they wanted to seek you out for some of your services?
Well, the first thing that I want to say is that there are lots of people like me, and they are listed as social workers, psychologists, counselors, and so that's important. And the other thing is that I have a website.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Mary Pendergreen, and that is my website name, marypendergreen.com, and it's all one word, Mary, M-A-R-Y, Pender, P-E-N-D-E-R, greenwithane, greene.com, marypendergreen.com. And I do see people, but I have more than a list of more than 100 therapists.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are of color, and it would allow you to be able to have other people that are in different parts of the country that are available. I'd be happy to answer any questions, make recommendations for people. I'm in New York City, but there are lots and lots of people throughout the country that could also be helpful, and I'd be happy to help you to think about where else might you do. I'd also suggest that you might want to take a look at Terry Williams's book about Black pain.
Okay.
It just looks like we're not hurting, and it's a way of being able to recognize that you're not alone, that no matter what you feel, there's somebody else that felt it, and no matter what it is that you're going through, there are people that have gone through it that have gotten to the other side, and even if you feel as though you don't have the answer, there are a lot of people that do have the answer, and it doesn't mean that you're weak.
Okay.
It means that you're smart.
Okay. Well, that's our show for today. I'm so sorry. It was so great having you on the show. And we would love to have you back if time permits at a later date.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you so much. And I just want to thank you again. I want to thank my listeners for their support. And I want you all to have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Take care now.
This is our stop for now. So come back soon and hang out with Aurelia Lyle from the Coco Express. See where she goes next. Until then, keep it real.